With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I've been enjoying...
Back in On The Drive, coming up in 15 minutes, we will go inside the mind of the machine. Also in the 3 o'clock hour, we will head down to Miami. It sounds like the Dolphins are interested in trading for the number one overall pick. They certainly have the ammunition and firepower to do so with 3 first-round selections. So we'll head down to Miami to get the latest on that coming up in the 3 o'clock hour. Right now, it is an honor to be joined by our next guest. He is the mayor of Kansas City, Missouri. His name is Quentin Lucas. Mayor Lucas, really appreciate you coming on today. So you came on last week to talk to us about the stay-at-home order. Let's start with this. Exactly how do you think the stay-at-home order is working so far?
You know, I think most people are following it. From what I see, you know, when you look at the traffic in the morning, it's not that heavy. Most businesses have shut down. A lot of people are following the rules. We've got a few problem areas. You know, I drove around Swope Park this weekend and saw that, particularly on Saturday night, there was a huge amount of partying, a bunch of kids playing basketball, that sort of thing. I get it. I understand. But at the same time, we're not supposed to be doing that. So we're going to enhance police patrols to make sure we're avoiding that. People need to make sure they're maintaining social distancing wherever it is they can. And so we've got more work to do, but I think Kansas City has done an outstanding job as they've gotten started on this stay-at-home era.
Mayor, what's the balance between, obviously, you guys have been encouraging people to go outside, but you know as well as anybody, once you create exceptions for people, they just abuse the exceptions. And I do feel like that's what's happening with the parks being open. What's the balance of you encouraging people to go outside, but also trying to be strict when it comes to the social distancing policy, as you called it?
You know, I think we need to recognize that, yeah, there are going to be a lot of people that don't follow the rules in the way that we would like. So there are some things that we have to do that are unfortunate. We're currently in the midst of taking down tennis nets in Kansas City. We'll likely be, you know, taking down basketball hoops, which breaks my heart. But, you know, we have to make sure it follows that, and we're going to have more enforcement. So you're probably going to see more park rangers and police that are in the parks, and the rangers telling people to disperse when they're getting in these bigger groups. You know, at this point, I don't think we're a community that needs to have the full curfew order or something of that sort. But I'll tell you this, I'm not going to let Kansas City get to the point like we're seeing in New York right now. That incredible, they have more people, but that number of infections that they're dealing with is heartbreaking. And it's not just big cities like that. It's New Orleans and the metro area there, which is actually, I believe, smaller than the Kansas City metro and probably has about 4,000 cases. That's crazy. So we need to do everything we can to make sure we're keeping that limited.
Mayor, there's a lot of people right now that are getting stir crazy and that just hope that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Is there one right now, or is this just kind of something that we're still playing by ear?
You know, I think from all experts that I talk to, there is a perceived light at the end of the tunnel. There is a way that, you know, with our practices right now, and you've seen it in a few areas. I was just reading an article about how in San Francisco they expected more of a spike, but due to a lot of the shutdown that they've done already, it is not, the case numbers aren't increasing to the level that we want. So there is light at the end of the tunnel. What I can't say is when that is exactly. And instead of giving a date, what I usually say is we need a few factors to exist. One, we need to have a decline in the number of new cases announced each day. I know that there's going to be a while we continue to have them, but what we can't have are these spikes where you're adding, you know, 15, 20 new cases a day in Kansas City, Missouri, or in Johnson County, or that sort of thing, which is sadly some of what we're seeing. You also want to make sure that our hospital networks are in a position where they can handle everybody that's coming through, both with coronavirus virus, but also the normal things that are existing each day. And then finally, you know, we want to make sure that the spread won't just reoccur. And so the way you do that is to trace and see, all right, where are infections happening? Are we getting new ones that are coming from community spread? Is it travel? I mean, it takes that sort of study to make sure that we're out of the woods, so to speak. And we're certainly not there yet. I don't expect us to be there probably for about a month at least.
Right now, we're talking to the mayor of Kansas City, Missouri, Mayor Quentin Lucas. Last time you were on, you talked a lot about flattening the curve. Where are we at when it comes to flattening the curve? And the only way I think we're really going to be able to defeat this and combat this is properly having enough tests for people, and that's going to be a huge step in the moving process. How close would you say we are to getting adequate testing for the residents of Kansas City, Missouri?
Not close, nearly enough. Not even close. And it's a problem. You know, it's a problem in this entire metro area, this entire region, anybody who can listen to 610, that, you know, and look, I'm not here to, you know, lay blame on people, but for once I'm going to. You know, we need more tests immediately in Missouri and in Kansas. The fact that there are people walking around right now through no fault of their own that don't know if they're ill, probably infecting people, spreading it, creating more problems, that's the travesty of this moment. And, you know, I actually don't know if I ever told you all this. I studied abroad in college in Cape Town, South Africa. And the amazing thing is I was actually still got a friend down there who was listening to a story and was talking about how, you know, you could get tested real quickly and then you get results soon and all that sort of stuff and you can limit it. And I'm like, dang, we can't keep up with South Africa on, like, tests and checkups and health. I mean, because it ain't that fancy. And so what I think we need to see more of from a federal level on down is an acceleration of testing. So folks actually know if they need to be truly quarantined. They know if there is a challenge, and we're not just telling people, well, you can't get tested unless you're really, really sick, which is unfortunately what a lot of people are hearing right now in Kansas City.
Are the people that you're hearing from still pissed off, or are they now understanding that this isn't something necessarily that's at my level or your level, but it's just a much bigger deal?
You know, I think there's still some people that are angry. You know, I talked to a barber the other day who was saying, you know, hey, well, you need to make me essential and all of that. And, it, you know, the thing I always tell people about essential businesses versus not, literally everything we're doing, we're not coming at this to attack anybody. We're not coming at this to challenge anybody. We're not coming at this because Quentin Lucas has a problem with something. This is to save lives. So the reason we don't have the people in the barbershop is because we see that that was an area where there could be extensive community spread. I know that some people say, well, how can the liquor stores be open, but this is? And you know what? They're problems. But here's the thing. More people can spread something at a church, right, and shaking hands and being around each other and all of that, than we're seeing evidence of them spreading it at some corner store. We're trying to make sure that people are good and behaving no matter where they are and keeping their social distance. But at the same time, we're going to continue to make sure that we're going at those events where you're seeing spread happen. I hate reading these stories from other parts of the country where you have people who are at a wedding or a funeral, and you've got entire families impacted. So that's why we're taking the steps we are now. And, you know, look, this is a challenging time to be a mayor, but frankly, I think the whole community is stepping up because, as y'all recognize, the whole world has changed on us. I mean, this is not something we're used to. Most of our disasters are like a tornado comes through town, and while those are tragic, it's limited. There's this time frame. You know when it's done, you know to rebuild. This is something wholly different, and so it's why, you know, we have to keep coming together throughout this crisis.
Right now we're talking to the mayor of Kansas City, Mayor Quentin Lucas, for a couple of more minutes. Mayor, you bring up businesses. I saw that you guys had to issue citations to 200 businesses. Has that been a problem for you, that people are not taking the advisory when it comes to what is an essential and a non-essential business?
You know, to some extent it is, but I think most people just wanted an opportunity to know what was essential versus not. And so we're making sure they know. But, you know, I think usually when people get notice about something they're doing that does not follow the rules that are issued and the rules that exist in this entire 2.3 million person metropolitan region, then, you know, we're making sure they know. We don't want to be Big Brother. We don't want to be knocking on people's doors and doing all types of crazy things, but at the same time, you know what, we're going to make sure that people stay safe. And so that's why we're taking these actions. That is, you know, that's a decent number of businesses, but we have a lot more in Kansas City, a heck of a lot more that are following the rules. And I think even since those letters were going out, we have more following our rules each day. So I expect people to understand what's happening, primarily because of the public. you know, you, the listeners right now, that are kind of saying, we're not going to this place that's creating problems. We are going to be responsible with our own businesses, our own families. That's how a difference is being made right now, and I'm very proud of Kansas City for it.
Mayor Lucas, last question here. It's crazy to think that we are just 1 week into this stay-at-home order that you issued for the next 30 days. When do you start the process of reevaluating if you're going to lift it or not? When do you start the process of asking yourself, is it going to be extended? Because I'm sure you saw it in Virginia. They have a stay-at-home order until June 10th. That's a long time from now.
You know, that is a very long time from now. We will keep reviewing as public health warrants it. I think everybody, and I'll just tell y'all in case you're wondering, because we're between, it's among friends right now. That order's not getting lifted soon, and by soon I mean probably not in the month of April. We see forecasts for an ongoing spike in the cases we have running at least until probably late-ish April here in the Kansas City area. We will make sure that we have that order in place so that we can keep people safe as long as possible. So we are not looking to do an early lift. I think the question we have to ask now is, if it's going into May, how long is it? What does it look like, et cetera? And so that's really where we're at now. But look, we listen to data all the time. We will look at facts. If there's a vaccine tomorrow, then that changes our calculus. But for now, we're expecting, and it's why we've let the people know that basically through the end of April, they can expect to continue to live under these orders.
That is the mayor of Kansas City, Mayor Quentin Lucas, joining us on The Drive. Mayor, really appreciate the insight, the information. Really appreciate you coming on. Thanks a lot.
Hey, thank you.
You just heard from the mayor of Kansas City that he does not anticipate the stay-at-home order being lifted in the month of April. So the staying inside and self-quarantining, I hope you are enjoying it, because we have another 30 days at least of the stay-at-home order in Kansas City, Missouri.
It's crazy to think that this just went into place. What the hell day of the week is it right now?
I mean, it is now officially 1 week.
This started last week.
It is Tuesday.
It's only been a week. Oh, my goodness. This is insane.
I just read a story while we were talking to Mayor Lucas that the city of Toronto, which is the fourth largest city in North America, they have banned public events until June 30th. Like, how is Toronto planning on resuming the NBA if they're banning public events until June 30th? Like, I think all of us want this wrapped up as quickly as possible, but I think we're starting to get more and more information that it is not going to be wrapped up anytime soon. And the conversation to start having when it comes to resuming our lives is not a 2 week or 3 week. It's probably a 6 to 8 week conversation of when things can start the process of getting back to normal. Coming up in 30 minutes, we'll talk. We'll head to Miami, as it would appear that the Dolphins are interested in the number one overall pick. We'll head to Miami to talk about that. But first, we'll go inside the mind of the machine. That's coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
Back in on The Drive. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll head to Miami, Florida, as there is a report that the Dolphins are interested in acquiring the number one overall pick to draft Joe Burrow. We'll head to Miami to learn more about that coming up. But before we do all that, let's take a trip inside the mind of the machine.
Oh, you really held it today. Who was the better college freshman? Your boy Zion or Derrick Rose?
Individually, Zion was, I thought, as a player.
Anthony Davis or Carmelo Anthony?
Carmelo.
I'm trying to think of any other freshman that actually went on, one and done freshman that actually went on to lead their team to a national championship. Carmelo did. Anthony Davis did. Am I missing somebody that's really obvious?
That is it.
Really doesn't happen that on that often.
That Duke team had Jahlil Okafor and all of those kids. They were all freshmen. And Jahlil Okafor and Justice Winslow.
Who's the more talented baseball player, Mike Trout or Ken Griffey Jr.?
Mike Trout. I think Mike Trout's one of the 10 best baseball players to ever play.
What if he never wins a playoff game?
I still think he's one of the 10 best baseball players. I think baseball's different, that it's so individualized. I don't really think those accomplishments matter as much to baseball players.
It's just crazy to think the best baseball player of all time, a guy who's already got, what, four MVPs, something like that, is kind of invisible. I mean, he's never really played in that game or had that one moment that we could point to and say, remember when Mike Trout did that? He just happens to have put together probably the best start to a career that any Major League Baseball player ever has.
How many baseball players would you say are visible? I don't know if the number's very high anymore.
And
I'm with you on Trout.
Griffey never had that moment either, to be fair. Griffey never had that moment either, to be fair, just to compare the two.
No, I mean, that's why I brought up Griffey, because both those guys kind of had a ton of talent. Neither one of them necessarily won a bunch. Celebrity birthday time, Jackie Chan.
56.
61.
66. Mandy Moore.
That's a good one. 42.
I'll say 38.
You guys are aging my girl. She's only 36. Russell Crowe.
58?
65.
57. Even though the Broncos now have Melvin Gordon, they plan on using Philip Lindsay as well. How do you see that working out?
It really depends on how good Melvin Gordon is. If Melvin Gordon is going to go back to being the running back that he was before he held out, I think it's going to work out really well. I still think Gordon is a pretty solid running back. I understand why teams were a little leery on spending big money on him, but I don't know if Lindsay is going to be a consistent guy that you trust to be a number one back, and most teams are going to a 1A, 1B situation. I like Denver's running game situation.
Who's your favorite two-back combo team of all time? Better get this one right, and it better be Christian Okoye and Barry Word, the only two NFL running backs to rush for 1,000 yards in the same season on the same team.
Can I use college in this?
Sure.
Reggie Bush and Lindale White.
Ooh, good one. What about who was Darren McFadden with?
Peyton Hillis and Felix Jones.
Marcus and Bo together in the NFL at the same time. Just a couple of years ago, Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara, they were awesome. How long is it going to take until a movie about this quarantine comes out? The movie you were telling me, Contagion, is that how I say it?
Yes, that's the name of the movie.
Is up 8,000% in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, I watched it probably 3-4 weeks ago, right when this thing really started. I watched it probably 2 to 3 years, I think. I think we'll get a really good documentary before we get a movie. I don't know if there's going to be much of a market for the movie like there will be for really good documentary pieces.
I feel like they're going to race to make this movie. Which is a funnier golf movie, Caddyshack or Happy Gilmore?
I enjoy Happy Gilmore more, but I think I'm more in the generation that would enjoy Happy Gilmore more than I would enjoy Caddyshack.
Better kids movie, The Sandlot or Mighty Ducks?
I like Mighty Ducks more.
Better sports movie, Major League or Space Jam?
Out of those two, Major League.
What Chiefs draft pick anytime were you the most excited about that didn't really work out that well?
It's a really good question. Chiefs draft pick that I was most excited about that didn't work out. I thought Glenn Dorsey had a chance to be a dominant player in the NFL. I was really excited about Glenn Dorsey, so I'll probably say him.
Remember,
did he have to be a first round? Because I was really excited about Snoop Menace.
Yeah, I was going to say Snoop Menace. What round was he drafted in anyway?
He was first round. He was like 19,
was
somewhere
Snoop
in that range.
No way
pick?
He was a first round pick. I think you're thinking of Jonathan Baldwin. He was a first round pick.
I thought Snoop was like a second or third.
They had a couple of busts. Who was it? Jonathan Baldwin, and who's the other wide receiver that was a bust? Damn it.
Sylvester Morris?
Yeah, Sly Morris. Thank you.
You're right. Snoop Menace was the third round pick, pick 77. My apologies.
Odds are out for the NFL draft first round. Let's play a quick bet it or forget it, C-Dot. 4 wide receivers will go in the top 22.
Yes.
5 teams will trade their first round pick.
Absolutely. I mean, I think we're going to see 2 in the first 5 picks. I think 3 and 4 are both going to move back for quarterbacks.
The Chiefs will select this year in the first round.
No. I think they're going to trade back. I think that's by far the smart play. I think the smart play is to go from 32 to somewhere in the mid-40s, pick up a second-round pick, third-round pick. They only got 5 picks. That's probably the best way to accumulate more picks in this year's NFL draft is to trade back from 1. So I think they trade back.
1 running back will be taken in this year's first round.
No. I think the value is elsewhere. That I don't think a running back gets taken in the first round. But I do think there's going to be probably a run on running backs probably in the high second rounds. That's actually pretty good value for it. So I would go no right now in terms of a running back. I think we'll see wide receivers. We'll see teams reach for wide receivers. We'll see the quarterbacks, and we'll see what happens with Jordan Love, how long he's going to stay on the board, because I think that Herbert, probably the lowest Herbert goes, I think is 6, and then we'll see what happens with Love. I think there's probably 10 great defensive prospects in this draft. Yeah, I don't think the value is going to be there at running back. I'd go no.
As someone that streams a lot of TV, C-Dot, what TV show have you had trouble finding on a streaming network that you wish was there? Is The Wonder Years on any of these streaming networks?
I think it's on Hulu, actually. Ever since I jailbroke my Fire Stick, that's not really an issue for me anymore because I just have access to way more shows than I did before. That I was actually trying to watch recently before I did that, The Real World, is probably the show that I had the hardest time trying to find. It's not on YouTube. It's not on the MTV app, and it's kind of hard to find, at least digitally, to stream. So The Real World's probably my answer.
Is Celebrity Deathmatch on the MTV app?
I'm not sure. I wasn't trying to watch it.
You were trying to watch Celebrity Deathmatch?
Celebrity Deathmatch was kind of one of those things that was really cool when I was like 15, 16. I don't really know how it would translate today, so I wasn't really that interested in watching. I'm not saying it wasn't good or bad, but I'm sure if you check out YouTube, I'm sure you could find a couple of the old classic Celebrity Deathmatch episodes.
Let's get it on! I wouldn't judge if something was good when you were 15. And say that makes it good or bad now. I mean, Forrest Gump came out when we were about 15. I still think it's the best movie of all time.
Well, I mean, Forrest Gump's like a serious thing. The Celebrity Deathmatch was like claymation. It was like a comedy. Those things just age a little bit different than, I would say, a movie like Forrest Gump.
Well, fine. We can do TV shows also. There are a lot of TV shows that came out. My Name is Earl is my favorite show. And I found it on Hulu, and it came out 15 years ago.
I've never seen that show, so I can't really speak on it.
I think the reason I like it is because the whole premise of the show is he's crossing off a list. Like, he finds karma, he wins the lottery, and he tries to go back and right all of his wrongs. I'm a guy that always has a list. I'm a very organized guy, so maybe that's why I like My Name is Earl.
Some things are just really good cultural pieces, and I think that's what that was. It's a really good cultural piece. Like, when it was popular, it was really, really good. Things like that just don't tend to age very well.
I think we're both looking forward to this Bulls documentary coming out there, right?
Absolutely. I can't wait for it. I think it's going to be great.
Before we get out of here, how good actually was Dennis Rodman? Because they won 3 finals before the Worm got there, and then they just became a completely different dynasty after. How good was Dennis Rodman?
I think Dennis Rodman is the best defensive player in the history of the NBA. In terms of blocks, rebounds, I think he's the best defensive player to ever play in the NBA.
I think he averaged like 15 boards a game or something. Was 6'8". For his size, he had no business leading the league in rebounding multiple times.
I mean, I think we see a lot that rebounding a lot is want to, and I think that a lot of guys just don't really want to rebound. I mean, Dennis Rodman led the NBA in rebounding for 7 consecutive years, starting in 1991 all the way to 1998. Listen to this. 18.7, 18.3, 17.3, 16.8.
Rebounds?
14.9, 16.1, 15.0. That was a 7-year span. He led the NBA in rebounding all of those years.
That's one of the craziest stat lines I've ever heard in my life. If you would have asked me before I asked you this question 5 minutes ago, I would have said Rodman averaged like 11. How many did Big Ben average when he was leading the league? Like 12 rebounds a game? This dude was pulling down 18 a game?
I mean, Dennis Rodman at age 38 years old averaged 14.3 rebounds a game.
My goodness.
38 years old. And he also got such a late start. I mean, he didn't make the NBA until he was 25 years old. Like, that's just not really how a lot of guys start. But once Rodman hit the ground running, he was an absolute monster when it came to the glass.
You're now outside the mind of the machine.
Coming up, we'll head to Miami, Florida. It would appear that the Dolphins are interested in trading for the #1 overall pick. We'll learn more about it together. It's The Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2-6.
Back in on The Drive, coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll be joined by Zach Krantz. He works in Miami to talk to him about one of the big stories in sports today, as it would appear that the Dolphins are interested in the #1 overall pick. They have 3 first-round selections. If you remember, they have their own selection. They have Pittsburgh selection in the trade for Minkah Fitzpatrick, and they have the Texans first-round draft pick as well in the trade for Laremy Tunsil. So the Dolphins certainly have a lot of ammunition to move up in the NFL draft. We'll see how realistic it is that the Dolphins could have the #1 overall pick to take their quarterback in Joe Burrow. I have also revamped Drive Jukebox. We will have you and Rob play that coming up in about 15 minutes or so. So speaking of the Miami Dolphins, before we talk to Zach Krantz, is there a chance that Tua can play in week 1 of the NFL season? Well, Laura Rutledge of GetUp certainly seems to think so.
The belief continues to be that whenever the NFL season begins next season, he would be able to play. Tua Tagovailoa would be ready by that point if a team is asking him to play that early.
If we are looking at Tua as a player that is going to be healthy and available for the beginning part of the season and the injuries aren't really a concern, I think there's a chance that Tua can go number one overall. Like, if we're talking about how the NFL is starting to change and evolve and quarterbacks like Tua are having more success than they ever have before, and you bring up kind of the Mahomes effect on the number one overall pick, where we've seen Baker Mayfield go number one overall. We've seen Kyler Murray go number one overall. Kyler and Tua's game to me are very similar. And if it's a fluke injury thing that happened in college and Tua's going to be healthy, the medicals are going to check out and he's going to be ready to go week one of the NFL season, I think we got to change the conversation and not make it seem like Burrow is just a lock to go number one overall. And we got to seriously consider Tua as a potential number one overall pick if he's going to be healthy.
Even if he's 120% healthy, I'm still taking Joe Burrow. I mean, Joe Burrow won the Heisman, won the national championship. He looks more like a typical quote-unquote NFL quarterback that we've gotten used to over the last 25 years. Now, you're right. If you're talking about the wave the last few years with kind of the smaller dual threat type of quarterback, the Patrick Mahomes, the Baker Mayfield, the Kyler Murray, certainly Tua looks more like that. I'm just not sure if Tua might not be a little bit overrated. Just a little bit overrated. And I'm not saying that he is, but he's had so much talent around him. And, of course, Joe Burrow has too at LSU. But Tua's gotten a chance to throw to Henry Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy, and Josh Jacobs was his running back. It'd be really easy to play quarterback with those guys and be successful. I just wonder why Tua has been Nick Saban's best quarterback with a bullet. Is it him or the talent around him? Because outside of Tua, who's the second best quarterback that Nick Saban's produced? A.J. McCarron? So I'll be convinced when I see it. But if you said you can either take Tua or you can take Joe Burrow, to me, there's no question I'm taking Joe Burrow.
I'm really high on Tua as a prospect. To me, he appears like I liked Marcus Mariota a lot coming out of college. I actually liked Mariota more than I liked Jameis Winston. Tua, to me, seems like what I thought that Marcus Mariota could be. I mean, the accuracy from Tua in a college level, completed 69% of his passes his sophomore season and was completing 72% of his passes. He's been absolutely insane when it comes to intangibles. And I'm just looking at the NFL and I'm just looking at the evolution of it, and I think players like Tua are starting to be the wave of it. That a lot of my evaluation on Tua was solely based off the health and the worry of, was he going to be healthy? You remember when he first got injured, a lot of people were talking about that being Bo Jackson in a very similar kind of injury. It goes to show you A, how physically different Tua is than Bo Jackson, and it just goes to show you the advance that Tua can have that injury and miss, what, three college games and continue on? Like, Tua hasn't missed a whole lot of time. And again, if he can hit the ground running and be able to start week one, then I think you really have to evaluate Tua a lot differently. He's maybe not the injury risk that we thought he was at the beginning of this process.
If I'm these general managers, though, I don't know if the best way to fill the quarterback position is to try to find the closest thing to Patrick Mahomes. I don't think there is another Patrick Mahomes.
I don't think that's what Tua is, though. I don't think he has nearly the arm strength that Mahomes does.
Of course he doesn't. There's not going to be anybody in this draft or the next draft or probably the next 10 drafts that's Patrick Mahomes or probably anybody that's that close to him. But as you just said, that's not stopping teams from trying to find the closest thing. There's a reason. You think Kyler Murray would have been the number one overall pick if Pat hasn't had that success, or even Baker Mayfield? I don't think there's any chance. Not only are they talking about Big 12 quarterbacks, but guys that play a kind of similar style where it's not just about their arm. It's about some of the intangibles and how good they are outside the pocket. The quarterback position looks completely different right now than it did 10 years ago. And you're right. Tua looks more like the modern day quarterback than Joe Burrow does. I just think Joe Burrow's a better quarterback.
We'll see what happens when it comes to the NFL draft. There was a story today from Todd McShay that he thinks that four quarterbacks could go in the top 12. I think the question really comes down to is, how serious are the Los Angeles Chargers about taking a quarterback this year? Because I feel very strongly that Cincinnati's going to take a quarterback, whether they take them at one or move down, and maybe they're not as sold on Burrow as everyone thinks. They let Miami jump up to number one. They pick up a couple extra picks, move down to three, move down to four, and then still get the draft pick and get the player that they absolutely wanted. I feel pretty strongly that Cincinnati is going to leave this draft with the quarterback. I feel pretty strongly that Miami is going to leave this. I think the question really starts is how serious is Los Angeles about a quarterback? Because I think, at least the way it's projecting, that Herbert, Burrow, and Tua are all going to go in the top 10. I don't know about Jordan Love. To me, he feels a lot like the flavor of the month in the NFL draft. And you know how every year there's that one player that kind of comes out of nowhere that we never really heard of and never really talked about that just appears on the scene and could get a first round grade. Like, I wonder if it with Jordan Love is, if you really think that he has a chance to be a good NFL quarterback, or we just know the value of getting it right at quarterback. And now, because of the rookie wage scale, there's not much of a negative penalty of missing on a quarterback. So we'll overextend and we'll draft Jordan Love way higher than we should, just because if it works out, it's a tremendous value to have that player on a rookie contract, or if it's belief that he can be really good. Because I follow and watch a lot of college football. Jordan Love was not a buzzing name during the college football season, but magically, once it became draft time, he started appearing on all these boards as a potential top 15 guy.
Well, either was Carson Wentz, and I get it's a little bit of a different situation. A guy like Josh Allen, nobody had heard of. Most of the time, when it's a guy like Mitchell Trubisky that's a workout warrior that for some reason gets drafted way higher than he should, I'm trying to think of the last time that that worked out. You're right. Most of the time, quarterbacks that had success at the NFL level, we at least heard of when they played college football. When it comes to Cincinnati, if they're thinking the same thing that you are, and they're not completely sold on Joe Burrow, and Miami's their dancing partner, and they're willing to trade with them, then I would absolutely do it. If they can still get Tua and they feel about the same with those two guys, Tua and the Heisman Trophy winner Joe Burrow, Miami's got, like you said, three first-round picks. If you can get the guy you want and tack on another first-round pick, then I would absolutely do that. It's just all indicators that I have heard, at least until the last couple of days, are that Cincinnati is infatuated with Joe Burrow.
Jordan Love, to me, just seems very boom or bust in this whole thing. That if you take the swing on Jordan Love and it works out, then you got a first-round grade on a quarterback. But just watching his film, hearing what the scouts are saying about him, he just seems to have a relatively low ceiling to me. I'd be really surprised if that was a quarterback that worked out in the NFL. He seems to me like a guy whose ceiling is maybe Jimmy Garoppolo. That if you get that player on a rookie contract, it's a fine contract to have. I'd be really stunned if Jordan Love turned out to be a star in the NFL.
Yeah, so would I. I mean, I didn't know who he was until we started talking about draft prospects. So since he's picking a quarterback at one, Washington's probably not going to take a quarterback at two because they got their guy Dwayne Haskins last year. I wonder if the Lions might surprise everybody and take a quarterback at three. We haven't really heard that they're done with Matthew Stafford, but man, Matthew Stafford's been their quarterback since the Nixon administration. How many times do we need to see Matthew Stafford go out there and quarterback a 7-9 team and get injured at the end of the year? Would they not be interested in a guy like Tua if he's still on the board?
I mean, we'll certainly see what happens. That's actually where I think the draft starts. At least as of today, I thought we had the number one and two selections already picked. That Cincinnati was going to draft Joe Burrow, that Washington was going to draft Chase Young, and then the draft was really going to start at three. I've been maintaining this entire time that I thought the Lions were going to trade out of three, trade down, pick up a pick because they're happy with Matthew Stafford. But now maybe this is just a smokescreen to kind of make you think that Cincinnati isn't as sold on Joe Burrow, or that Miami is maybe more of a wheeler and dealer than people want to think. But that's really where I think the draft starts. I think the Lions really like Matthew Stafford, but I do understand the point of they've been in the same place with their quarterback, it feels like, for the last 9 years and haven't gotten any better. I think you got to ask yourself, are you strong enough as an organization to give a young quarterback everything that he needs? Because Stafford, I've never denied Stafford's physical abilities, his ability to lead a team. They've just done such a poor job of putting the necessary parts and coaching staff and structure and environment around him, which has really stalled his career.
It's a really interesting top five for some of these teams. They technically have a quarterback, but are they going to take a quarterback? Like Washington, for example, they've got Dwayne Haskins. Well, what if they could get Tua? Would they maybe pull the trigger on that? Like we were just talking about Detroit. They've got their guy. Maybe they want to upgrade. The Giants, they got Daniel Jones. What if they think Justin Herbert's better? It's going to be a crazy draft.
No, it certainly is going to be a crazy draft. Someone asked a question, wasn't Patrick Mahomes the flavor of the month when he got drafted? No, he certainly was. Mahomes wasn't really on a lot of people's radar, but I think the tape really jumped out when it came to Patrick Mahomes, and that's what really change the conversation around him. I mean, you're right. Sometimes the flavor of the month works out. Patrick Mahomes was the flavor of the month. A lot of people were talking about Deshaun Watson. I think a lot of real hardcore NFL people knew about Mitch Trubisky, and Mahomes kind of popped up and then rapidly jumped up the charts. That's what Jordan Love is. I don't think he has nearly the physical traits that Patrick Mahomes does, and he didn't play at a major level that Mahomes did either, so just the competition level is going to be different. It's going to be really curious to see who bites when it comes to Jordan Love. I could see him. He seems like Drew Lock to me this year. I could see him going in the top 10, or I could see him falling to the second round because no one's in love with him. But I do feel pretty strongly that Herbert, Burrow, and Tua are all going to go in the top, probably top 8.
Most football fans, though, had at least seen, if not heard, of Patrick Mahomes. Played at Texas Tech. They're on TV a lot. Flashy type offense. Where's the bandana? I mean, I knew enough about Patrick Mahomes. I knew more about Deshaun Watson because he had played in a couple of national championship games. But I think the Chiefs got that one right.
Let's go to the phone line right now. We'll head to Miami to catch up with Zach Kranz to talk about the news that the Dolphins could potentially trade for the number one overall pick. Zach, how realistic is this that the Dolphins can move up in the draft?
Well, I guess the first thing you really have to ask yourself is, does Cincinnati want to get rid of that number one pick? Because, of course, the Dolphins, that's what they want. They would want their choice of the quarterback. And, of course, now with Tua being kind of injured, but, yeah, seems like he's okay. Joe Burrow is the number one pick in this draft. He's going to be the number one pick. The Dolphins would love to have him. I guess it really comes down to two things. A, of course, do the Bengals want to get rid of one? And two, what do they want for it? The Dolphins have all the capital in the world when it comes to this draft. The Dolphins considerably 14 picks run this year's NFL draft. Whatever they want to do, they can do. But it really comes down to what they want. I mean, we've had this discussion on our show, me and Joe Rose, about what would it take? What would you would do? For months now, Joe has said, I'm not giving it up. I'm staying at five. Then it's, all right, well, if they want number five, and then maybe want the pick in the 20s, and then maybe something else, maybe. Then it's okay, let's give them 5 and 18 and move up. If they want all three number one picks, I think that's going to be tough to do. But if they want two of them, and then maybe something in that second or third round, or a future second or third rounder, I think the Dolphins would be willing to do it. But I think Cincinnati, and listen, if I was on the other side of the phone call too with Chris Greer, I would say I want all three ones. I want two next year. I would just ask for the world and see what happens from there. But if the price is right, I do think the Dolphins would move up. Armando Salguero from the Miami Herald wrote about it months ago, and his story is now popping back up all over the place because maybe there's a little steam to it. But it really comes down to what the Bengals will take, because the Dolphins will offer a lot. But I'm not on board for all three number ones. I'm on board for two ones and some other change here and there when you have to give it out. But all three ones, I wouldn't do it.
Right now, we're talking to Zach Kranz in Miami about the top story that the Dolphins could be moving up for the number one overall pick. I'm curious how your listeners, how fans in Miami feel about Tua, because to me, Tua's a really good prospect that you got to feel absolutely certain about Burrow to jump from 5-1 and give up those two first-round picks when you could just move up to maybe 3 or 4 and then just take Tua. I'm curious how Miami fans feel about him.
It's really 50-50, and it's so weird because obviously the big deal, if you watched the first four Dolphin games last year, they were losing by 40 points a game, 50 points a game. I didn't think anyone had a shot at getting that number one pick outside of Miami. And all of a sudden at the end of the year, they started winning games. I mean, if they would have lost to New England and then lost to Cincinnati those last two games of the year, the Dolphins would be picking number one right here without having to do anything else. But I think it's a 50-50 split with fans. I think some fans are on the tank for Tua train, and they were last year. Then he got hurt, obviously, and now people are in that other 50% crowd. Don't take him. He's not going to be durable. Let's try something else. Maybe it's Jordan Love. Maybe it's Justin Herbert. If I'm sitting there at five, and I'm the GM of this team, and Tua's still on the board, I'm taking Tua over Love, and I'm taking Tua over Justin Herbert. I'm just doing that because it's me, and I do think that Tua, by some people, listen, by people smarter than me in the NFL or around the NFL, say he would be the number one quarterback if he was fully healthy right now, but he's not, and it's a hip, and you don't know about it. It's a conversation we had on the air. You almost wish he tore his ACL or did something where, like, you knew he was going to get the surgery, and you knew in about 12 months, maybe even less than that, he'll be perfectly fine. You just don't know what the hip. And the Dolphins need a quarterback. We need to do something down here. And the last good quarterback down here, and when I say good, I mean someone that perennial took you to the playoffs was Dan Marino. Dan Marino retired 20 years ago. So it's been a long time since we had a guy behind, I guess you'd say, the wheel of this team taking us to the playoffs.
Well, coming from the people listening right now, we appreciate the fact that the Dolphins beat New England because that completely changed the road for the Chiefs in the postseason. Speaking of New England, right. Tom Brady's old team in the same division as the Miami Dolphins, if the Dolphins get the quarterback right, whoever it is, Burrow, Tua, somebody else, how close are they in that division now that Brady's gone? It looks like maybe the Bills are the best team.
Yeah, I think the Bills right now are the best team in the AFC East. I mean, of course, it depends on what happens with the Patriots. You know, maybe if they do a Cam Newton or Jameis Winston or someone like that, but I still think that the Bills are going to be the favorite in the AFC East. But I do think, listen, there's a lot of moves the Dolphins have made so far in free agency. But, yeah, spending a lot of money, but they had a lot of money to spend. Did they overspend? Yeah, anyone that's in free agency overspends a little bit on guys. But they addressed positions that they needed to. They had no pass rushers on this team last year. The best pass rusher on this team was a guy that got cut by the Cowboys, Taco Charlton, and he only had a couple sacks. There was no pass rush last year for this team. So to get Van Noy and you bring in some other guys and you at least solidify that to a point. You still need another guy, and they're going to draft a defensive end and edge rusher at one point, and that's fine. But I just look at the fact that they are a quarterback away from really being a contender. I don't know if the Jets and Adam Gase and Sam Darnold, I just don't know what that team is going to look like next year. Maybe they are the best team in the AFC East. I wouldn't bet on it. Right now I bet on the Bills. But if the Dolphins can get a quarterback in place, they have a decent set of wide receivers, they have a pretty good tight end, they have to address the offensive line. I don't even think there's a left tackle startable on this team right now. Quarterback, left tackle, get your guys in place. The Dolphins without, and my hands are in the air while I say this, thank goodness Brady's not in New England anymore, there's a chance to win the AFC East for anyone at this point, I guess.
Does it seem like that Miami is in a group with a bunch of other teams right now in the AFC that are trying to figure out not just how to eventually beat Patrick Mahomes, but how to find their quarterback? Because right now the Dolphins aren't unique. I feel like half the league is kind of in the same situation.
Yeah, everyone's looking for their franchise guy. Everyone's looking for their Pat Mahomes. Everyone's looking for their Lamar Jackson. Everyone's looking for their guy that's young and legitimately at that point could take their team to the next level. And, yeah, maybe it's Tua. Maybe it is Joe Burrow. Maybe Justin Herbert, who is not the most favorable name down here. I think he's the fourth out of those top four guys that fans want down here. Jordan Love, I believe, has jumped Justin Herbert in the fans' eyes right now. If it's just one of those guys, what happens if they find their franchise guy with the fifth pick? What happens if, like you guys mentioned, they trade up to two or three? I'm guessing three would be the spot to pick up Tua at that point and get their franchise guy. And right now in the league, if you have a franchise quarterback, especially a guy, now you guys will be facing something different in a year when you have to pay Patrick Mahomes $10 billion a year, but he's totally worth it. If you can get a guy on the cheap for a couple of years and build the rest of your team and then eventually pay your quarterback, that's the way to go. But if you can't find someone in the draft, you're really just putting a Band-Aid on a team. And a Band-Aid could work for a year or two, but it's not going to work for the long run. It just never will.
That is Zach Krantz from Miami with the top story today in sports, that there is a report that the Dolphins are interested in trading up for the number one overall pick to draft Joe Burrow. Zach, really appreciate the insight and information. Thanks for coming on, my man.
Anytime, guys. Thanks very much.
That is Zach Krantz joining us on The Drive. It's interesting, as we've done these kind of pop-ins during NFL free agency, that how wide open the NFL is, kind of seeing it from the different perspectives. If you're in Kansas City, when you look at how wide open the NFL is, you feel a sense of dominance over these other teams, and you're the Super Bowl champion, you've got the quarterback that everybody wants, that these other teams aren't really close to you when it comes to our evaluation of these teams. If you're the other 15 teams in the AFC, I think you look at it as just as wide open, where there's not much of a difference between the teams that you would have 2, 3, 4, 5, and the team that you would have with 11. Like, you're really high on the Pittsburgh Steelers. Certainly fine. I don't really think there's a big gap in difference between the Pittsburgh Steelers roster and the Miami Dolphins roster at this point, especially when you factor in, and the Dolphins have 11 draft picks and 3 in the first rounds. Like, the Dolphins can get really, or they can really improve here in the next 30 days, where there's 12, 13 teams in the AFC that feel like we can make the playoffs next year. Like, if we had to sit here and make a list. What teams don't feel like they have a chance to make the playoffs going into the AFC? Like, you can make a strong case for just about everybody. I think it's kind of hard to make that point with the Jets, given the division that they're in, and I don't really think they've improved that much. But I think Miami should be thinking that they can be a wild card team. Buffalo, they went to the playoff last year. Like, you can make a strong playoff case for about 10 to 12 teams in the AFC that it's really wide open from the Kansas City Chiefs perspective, that you don't feel like you have a challenger. If you're in that other group, you can win 10, 11 games in the AFC and put yourself in a position to make a run the same way we saw Tennessee do this year.
And this always happens in the NFL. We're in that period where it's one, maybe you could argue two, three dominant teams in the NFL, but that's it. Now, 4 or 5 years from now, whatever team Trevor Lawrence lands on, Tua lands on, Joe Burrow lands on, maybe they'll become the dominant team 4 or 5 years from now. But C-Dot, if we just jump on our hot tub time machine for a minute and we go back 5 or 6 years ago, Tom Brady was a top five quarterback. Andrew Luck was a top five quarterback. Ben Roethlisberger was a top five quarterback. Peyton Manning was a top five quarterback. Those guys are either gone or about to be gone. It's Pat's time right now, and it looks like he's got the stage on his own, at least for the time being.
Yeah, I mean, I look at the league right now, and I think the league is certainly in a transition. As you alluded to, those guys that dominated the league for a 10-12-year span between Brady, Manning, Breeze, Roethlisberger, Rodgers, they're all 35 and up or retired now at this point. Like, we don't think that Brady has too many years of dominant football left. Roethlisberger's in the exact same boat. Breeze is in the exact same boat. The league is going through a shift and a transition. We see this happen in sports all the time. We saw it in Major League Baseball when the Yankees dynasty ended and it started to transition into other teams. We see it happen in the NBA all the time, where Kobe, they had their run, the Warriors had their run, and now the NBA, at least when they were playing, they were completely wide open. The league is making that transition in a post-Tom Brady, post-Patriots dynasty era. There's one team that seems to be well equipped for it, but man, the league just changes so quickly in a 12 to 18 month span that we have these conversations about the Chiefs and how they sit now. Man, who knows what injuries happen? Who knows who's unhappy with their contract and demand a trade? A team like the Minnesota Vikings, as talented as anybody, when they signed Kirk Cousins to the deal, you had Cousins, you had Dalvin Cook, you had two of the top, 15 wide receivers in the NFL. Dalvin Cook couldn't really stay healthy. Cousins wasn't the quarterback that we thought, and they traded Stephon Diggs. The league just ebbs and flows so much, man.
Yeah, it's not about who you pay or when you pay him. It's about stacking up a bunch of good moves together. Like, if you just had Patrick Mahomes and a bunch of other guys, then the Chiefs wouldn't be nearly as dominant as they are right now. But when you talk about the fact they've got the best tight end in the league, a top three wide receiver in the league, one of the best pass rushers in the league in Frank Clark, probably a top five member of anybody's secondary, Tyrann Mathieu, the second best defensive tackle behind Aaron Donald and Chris Jones, we talk a lot about Pat. Because Pat's incredibly special and has a chance to be the best quarterback of all time. But this team is much more than just Patrick Mahomes.
No, absolutely. Coming up in just a bit, the Michael Jordan documentary on the 90 Bulls has been pushed up. There was an interesting story that's already come out from it. I want to ask you guys a question. Next is The Drive.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.